This is Danny and Gallant on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app and 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Try to put on the show.
I'm a little mad at myself for having wavered with my opinions on certain quarterbacks this year. First, it was Carson Wentz versus Dak Prescott, even though Carson Wentz had a very, very, very disappointing season until the very finish when he was able to make it somehow. The Eagles get to the playoffs without all those weapons. And in comparison to Dak Prescott. And also, I did it with Jimmy Garoppolo. In fact, at one point, I started calling Jimmy Garoppolo Wobbleopolo. I got to admit, though, Danny,
That's a terrible joke.
Well, you're no, right.
It is. Fantastic. It's a god awful joke.
One of the greatest nicknames of all time. And honestly, I'm just going to save it, put it on the shelf, and in case I want to break it out for fine use at some point down the road. I was enamored with Jimmy G when he played for the New England Patriots against the Miami Dolphins for a half. I thought to myself, man, this guy just stands out. There's something about him that jumps off the screen.
It's his jawline.
Well, he is very handsome, Jess.
It could be how terrible the Miami Dolphins are. When was the last time they made the playoffs?
Listen, it's 2009? Not about that. It's about what you saw. And this guy had a quick release. He's got a little mobility. He, I thought, had the capability to potentially someday be a top 10 quarterback. And I think after getting past that knee injury that took him out last year, as the season's progressed, I think he has gotten better. I don't know how much better he gets. I think he's pretty close probably to reaching his ceiling. But he's a guy that hasn't gotten a whole lot of respect. And maybe this is a Seattle versus San Francisco thing, Danny, but this is a guy who has helped the 49ers get out of holes, specifically that 20-7 hole against the New Orleans Saints in that classic of a game in the Superdome.
Oh, G-A-R-A-P-O-L-P-P-O-L-O. I don't know. Forget it.
Nope. It's G-A-R-O-F-A-L-O.
Garoppolo.
Okay. Garoppolo. Janine Garoppolo, right?
That's not nice. This is the lack of respect.
If there's one thing that I really care about, it's giving people the proper amount of respect and not disrespecting them. In fact, at any point somebody says that they feel disrespected, I'm fairly certain that you're listening to like pure ego that's speaking. And you point out the New Orleans game. Isn't that the game where his most important completion was a fourth down throw to George Kittle that traveled about 4 yards in the air, and then Kittle proceeded to run roughshod through with an individual hanging from his face mask?
Like,
I don't know if that was coming through in the clutch for Jimmy G so much as having a force of nature there as his tight end.
He knew he needed to throw to him. I mean, that's just a smart play. He's got Deebo Samuel out there.
Right.
He's got Emmanuel Sanders.
He's got huge weapons, and he's got a great defense behind him.
And he made the right decision on that play. Do you feel that Jimmy Garoppolo is trending in a direction where you, before a Seahawks 49ers game, would actually be concerned that he can pick you apart?
He is the fourth guy that I'm worried about on the San Francisco 49ers right now.
Number four. That's fairly high.
Yeah. He's the fourth guy that I'm worried about. Do I think he's got a shot to be really good? Yeah, I do. And as much as I want to sort of joke and say I don't think he's proven anything yet, no. He's shown he can pilot a team. He can be in charge of a team that is overwhelmingly talented. And not only does he not make the mistakes that will kill you, right? Like the Mike Tomlin, we want him to not kill us. He's very firmly established he won't kill you. And I think that he's shown he's more than competent to execute what the offense calls for him to do. I still think that there's a huge question left unanswered, which is, when you get in a situation where nothing else is working for your team, is he good enough to make up the difference? Is he good enough? And really, for 2 years, that's a lot of what Russell Wilson has done. And Russell Wilson, in my mind, has answered that question in much the same way Drew Brees and Tom Brady. I don't know if Jimmy Garoppolo is good enough to do that. I think that his performance sort of down the stretch of close games has been some good, some bad. It hasn't been where I'm like, oh, I'm pretty sure he's going to choke here. But it's also not been that every time he gets that situation, you're like, man, look out for that guy because he's absolutely able to do it. In my mind, he still doesn't have a signature victory.
Right, and that is something that he's going to need, and this Super Bowl is going to provide him an opportunity for that. I understand skepticism, and I understand doubt. I think, though, a lot of people with Jimmy Garoppolo, they don't talk about him with those two sentiments. They talk about him with dismissal. And I don't think that's fair. And I feel that he's a guy that's a lot like Kirk Cousins in that respect. It's a guy that you look at, and with Kirk Cousins, he has had so many opportunities, and he's just never been able to kick the door down. So theoretically, 5 years from now, we could be talking about Jimmy Garoppolo the same way that we talk about Kirk Cousins. But the reality is, I mean, Garoppolo has, and maybe he only needed 8 passes against the Green Bay Packers, who can't stop the run. But maybe we are talking about him like that in a couple years. I think now, though, to say that he can't theoretically, if the 49ers fall in a hole against Kansas City, is it really out of the realm of possibility for him to get the team back in the game the way it was with Ryan Tannehill? And honestly, the way it was somewhat was with Deshaun Watson, though I don't think that was really his fault in the divisional round.
Do I think it's possible? Yeah. Do I think it's likely? No.
What would you put as a percentage chance?
Well, that they fall behind by 20 points?
Let's say it's a 21-7 or 21-3 kind of game. It's like a 2-3 score game. How are you feeling?
10%.
10%
shot. And if Patrick Mahomes is in the same situation, if it's in the first half, I'm going to give it still probably not quite 50%, but 45% chance.
Yeah, that does sound accurate.
You've seen Mahomes be able to do it. Look, I think Kirk Cousins is the fair comparison here in the sense that you have a guy who has been crowned, minted, paid as the franchise quarterback, and then you hope he grows into and is able to carry that role. And you don't know yet. I think that Kirk Cousins has been pretty good. I think Kirk Cousins this season was better than Aaron Rodgers was. Aaron Rodgers is trending downward, though. Is Kirk Cousins a guy that can lead you to a championship? Can he get you through the one game where, like, nothing else is working and he's got to be the guy that dig you out of it? I've seen Russell do it. I saw Russell do it his rookie year when it was at Atlanta and they're down 20 points and they come absolutely storming back in the second half and take the lead. We've seen Russell do that. I think that's the hardest thing and the rarest thing to find in sports. And the weird thing about Jimmy Garoppolo, and I think this goes hand in hand with where Kirk Cousins is they're paid like guys that can do that.
Yeah.
And we still don't know if they can. That's kind of the unanswered question. As far as the disrespect, like, Jimmy's just going to have to take it. You can't be that good looking and have everything going for you. Shaquille O'Neal couldn't shoot free throws. It wouldn't be fair if Shaquille O'Neal was a great free throw shooter in addition to being that physically dominant. So if Jimmy Garoppolo, the burden he has to carry in his charmed life with that jawline and those eyes is that people tend to dismiss him a little bit. Tough luck, Jimmy. You can't have everything.
Don't you think some of that doubt and disrespect comes as he's like the last person in the line of succession of overhyped Patriots backup quarterbacks too? Because that's how I see a lot of it. Before he was ever proven, obviously he came in for C.J. Beathard in 2017 when he was traded away. I'm going to go with Beathard. And then, you know, he got hurt during the 2018 season. And then 2019 is the first chance he's had to prove anything. And you're just waiting for him to fail just because so many who were in Tom Brady's shadow had before.
And that's the funny thing, Jess, that you bring that up. I never understood why he was lumped in with all the other ones. Brian Hoyer, come on, or Ryan Mallett, and some of these guys
were. What about Brisket? Brisket moved on, and I'm still hearing about how he might be really good for the Indianapolis Colts.
I think Jacoby Brissett is exactly the worst situation you want to have in a quarterback because he's just good enough for you to feel like you can get by, but he's not quite good enough to get any further than that. I think we learned that this year. Brissett's a third round pick, Danny. With Garoppolo, I always felt that there was something a little bit different. And clearly the Patriots felt the same way. And clearly Tom Brady felt the same way. Tom Brady's embraced just about every single backup quarterback that he's ever had. What's the one quarterback that he did not embrace? Garoppolo. I mean, he basically had him traded.
Is that true what happened? Because that's always puzzling to me. You hear all the different things that Garoppolo was so good, and then Belichick basically decided to give him away at the last minute in an attempt to appease Tom Brady. All that stuff's weird. He and Brady have the same agent. I don't know how antagonistic they could possibly be to each other if they had the same agent and were teammates. The whole thing's weird. Here's what I'll say. I generally think that backup quarterbacks get overhyped. They're like the 7-foot Eastern European jump shooter coming into the NBA where we don't know all that much about them. But man, it's delicious and tantalizing because what you've seen of them looks fantastic. And usually when a backup quarterback gets traded somewhere to become the starter, he stinks. It happened with Scott Mitchell. It happened with Kevin Korn on the Cobb. It happened with Matt Flynn when the Seahawks signed him. The backup quarterback generally tends to be completely underwhelming
right.
Once he gets it. And so when the 49ers traded for him, I look at it, first, I want him to stink because I don't want the 49ers to be any good, because that will just create suffering among their fan base and they can stay out of eyesight, which is generally the least annoying spot for them. The second part of it is he's a backup quarterback from New England. And, okay, his hopes, and he's great, and he's fine. We've seen lots of guys look really good when they've been in limited opportunities, and we'll see how it pans out. And now maybe he is good. It's possible. And I don't want to say that there's anything that I've seen this year that makes me think, nope, he doesn't have it, he won't have it. By the same token, I will wait to anoint him as a true franchise quarterback until I see him actually able to carry his team to a victory.
He reminds me a lot of Tony Romo. And remember, that was a big thing that was held against Tony Romo. And I'll bring it up from this perspective. He can move around, pretty quick release, prone to unbelievably dumb throws from time to time. And that is his biggest problem. And if that is a problem for him in the Super Bowl, you could very easily see some of the opportunistic players in the Chiefs secondary taking advantage of it. I mean, we've seen it a couple of times. Every now and then he throws a throw and you're just like, what? Are you Jameis Winston right now? And
is Romo a great quarterback? And I ask on it because people have different opinions about him. His statistics are awesome. He never really won in the playoffs. And he's known more for the failures in big moments. And maybe that changes if Dez Bryant gets the reception. Like, honestly, he probably should have in that game against Green Bay. Maybe that changes. But he didn't have that much postseason success. He has huge statistics for a glamour franchise. Is if Jimmy Garoppolo has Tony Romo's career, isn't that a disappointment, kind of?
That's a great
If Jimmy
question.
Garoppolo walks in and has this defense with him and he's Tony Romo, like, I don't know if that's a gold standard. I say, man, that's a really successful trade that they made to be able to get him and pay him all that money and have that time. Like, Romo never really won in the postseason.
Right. That's something that Romo never did. And you know, I think when you remember the catch that Dez may or may not have made, I mean, that Cowboys defense.
It.
Well, here's the thing. I thought strongly if the Packers were going to get the ball back, I think there was like a minute left. They were going to march down the field easily and score. And we've seen it happen in another Cowboys-Packers playoff game where Aaron Rodgers had only a little bit of time left, and then he throws that pass to Jared Cook on the sideline. Yeah. It was an unbelievable throw. Next thing you know, the Packers are walking away once again with a victory. Romo as a great quarterback. I can't say great. I just can't. Because I think the things that are attached to him are playoff failures. And, of course, this isn't even really his fault because they should have had a better holder for the muffed hold in the game between the Cowboys and Seahawks.
Better holder? What, he was holding was too much for him?
Starting quarterback. You shouldn't be holding.
Well, he was holding because Bledsoe was the starter earlier that year. That's like the easiest thing possible for him to be able to do. The only thing that I regret about that season when they lost and did Dez catch it, is I'm fairly certain they would have been coming to Seattle that next week, and they had beaten Seattle earlier in the season in what will be remembered as Percy Harvin's final regular season game for the Seattle Seahawks. Watching Romo again implode in Seattle would have been fantastic.
Yeah, it would have. Definitely would have.
Maybe he'd cry again.
Oh, that's my quarterback. That's my quarterback.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's what we remember about Tony Romo. He's a great announcer. I'm not sure if he was a great quarterback.
He made Terrell Owens feel like a good teammate for 5 seconds. That's something.
Yeah, that was him.
Raise a banner.
It's Danny and Gallant. Now it's time for us to go around the NFL.
It's time to go around the NFL. Brought to you by Toyota of Puyallup. The bottom line on the biggest stories in the NFL every morning at 9:15 with Danny and Gallant.
Today's an exceptional day.
Jess.
Exceptional, folks.
Is Tony Romo, is he a great quarterback?
No.
Is he great?
Great, no.
He's worse than Philip Rivers, right? And Philip Rivers is, Philip Rivers isn't.
I'd agree with that.
Philip Rivers works his way into great.
Right.
Tony Romo, Rivers, no.
Philip Rivers is as good as you can be without having won a Super Bowl. I would would be my evaluation of Philip Rivers, and Tony Romo is a notch below that.
Yeah, maybe the toughest quarterback of all time, too, considering he played in a conference championship game with a torn ACL, and he still has his consecutive start streak going.
Can't be that tough if you don't curse.
Yeah, I don't know. Sometimes you're even tougher if you restrain.
Nope. Not tougher. It's weird. It's weird, strange.
Well,
it's unnatural.
There's a difference between not cursing and fake cursing. If you're a fake curser, not tough. If you don't curse at all, that means you have a lot of self-control.
I feel like sometimes I've been a fake cursor. It turned into filler words for me. Never a good sign. I blame being from Boston originally.
I would blame being on the radio.
Oh, yeah. I'm just
and
making up for lost
for
time.
That. Well, Patrick Mahomes, his high school coach, will be present at the Super Bowl. That is thanks to Cardinals head coach Cliff Kingsbury, who gifted him one of his tickets. Now, obviously, Cliff would have known him because he recruited Patrick out of high school to play at Texas Tech. And so that is just something that the coach was extremely surprised by and obviously grateful for.
Pretty cool. I think it's awesome that Cliff Kingsbury did that. I can't imagine the pressure on players when you get to the Super Bowl to provide all those tickets. That's got to be hard. Oh, that's got to be really hard.
I mean, how many? What did they get? Two?
Two.
Each? Yeah.
And then you're hustling from other players who get them. Yeah, that's tough.
I wonder what they go for as well. You might have to do some negotiating in the locker room if you want to buy some extra player tickets from some of your teammates. I'm also surprised by Cliff Kingsbury. I mean, this is a great move by Cliff Kingsbury. I mean, you got Super Bowl tickets. Bring a date, you know? I mean, come on.
That's a bad first date.
a bad first date, the Super Bowl? Although I suppose there's never living up to that after the first one.
Well, it's also like it's going to a movie. You don't talk. You can talk during that. Don't talk to me. Football's happening.
Oh, that's true.
All I'm going to say is that my entire conception of the world has been rearranged because now Cliff Kingsbury is the equivalent of Vegas Dave. They're both the same.
Don't bring a date to the Super Bowl. It's too much pressure. Anyway.
It's definitely a hard-o move. But sometimes that works.
You know, there's a very, very expensive restaurant here in Seattle that doesn't even have the prices on the menu. And I was brought on a first date there. And that was too much. So the Super Bowl? Yeah, no.
Yeah, that same restaurant, which is Canlis, which is fantastic, which
okay.
I'm going to
remain anonymous.
With my
fine.
Wife, I took her the first year we were dating. I think we've been dating about 6 or 7 months. I took her to Canlis for her birthday, and she almost told me, "Don't take me there," because she said we were making the same amount of money, so I knew how much it cost, and I knew how much money you had, and I wasn't that into you.
Oh no.
And you know what I said? Shoot or shoot!
Kobe!
That's exactly right. Kobe!
Gronk has the opposite advice that Steve Montana does for Tom Brady. He's saying that he deserves to see what's out there.
I'm really curious. Every single day, I think I get slightly more inclined to believe there is a world where Tom Brady is not the quarterback of the New England Patriots. I'm still having a hard time thinking, though, Danny, that he is going to all of a sudden say, yeah, I'm going to play for the Chargers and the Spanos family. Woohoo! Yeah!
You compare how Eli Manning left the Giants to how Phillip Rivers is leaving the Chargers, and you can't help but feel that Eli was right to say, I'm not going to go play for those goons.
100%!
Like, it's terrible. Like, you just watch. I understand if you're the Chargers, I guess. But you just watch the send-off to Eli Manning, and the Giants have been significantly worse over the past few years with Manning than the Chargers have been with Rivers, and it seems like the Chargers can't wait for him to leave.
They've botched two of their most important players in franchise history and their exits. Because the same thing happened with LaDainian Tomlinson.
Tomlinson, yeah. You're right.
The Browns have fired more people in a shock to nobody.
Oh, boy.
They have parted ways with Vice President of Player Personnel, Alonzo Highsmith. This is in the wake of Andrew Berry at the tender age of 32 becoming their new GM.
Man. They have a lot of Harvard and like Ivy Leaguers that are now in power. So part of me is like, okay, this is more of the same old Browns.
The nerds win.
But yeah, I mean, as someone who takes pride in being related to someone who went to Harvard, which is probably the most pathetic thing that you could ever admit.
No. The worst thing is when you tell people your SAT
700. What's up? Math score. Anyway, sorry. Back to this. I do wonder if having a bunch of people that have a different kind of background that all seem to be like-minded in their line of thinking can overcome the albatross that is Jimmy Haslam as owner of the team.
You got hive mind danger, though. is that everybody's, you're not going to have, you need to balance out the nerds with some commissioners of common sense who are like, no, that's dumb. We're not doing that. I don't care what your little funny figures tell me. Like, we're not doing that. I like it. I actually would advocate and advise teams to try and do things differently rather than try to be better at the same things that everyone else is doing. I also wonder, in the NFL, when you get fired, do they have security walk with you to your desk? Do you just not have anything in your desk? As someone who's once had his desk delivered to him at home because he wasn't allowed back in the building, all of these are the things that really puzzle me.
The entire desk just got delivered?
Yeah, the contents of it.
Oh, the contents. I mean, that would have been pretty awesome. Like, oh, I got a free desk. Well, that's a nice parting gift.
When I was subsequently rehired by that place, I missed the opportunity to walk back in with a box and say, hey, guys, still got my stuff.
Well, Bill O'Brien officially has the title of GM now, much to Paul Gallant's delight, and also has a little thing to deal with in the re-signing of his quarterback, Deshaun Watson.
I don't get this at all. And I mean, I covered the organization. I lived in the city for 8 years. There is not one person in the city of Houston right now that is a fan of this. And when you look at how this has been handled, you have to wonder about the owner, Cal McNair, and if this owner is someone that actually can be trusted. If I'm a fan of that team, I'm really thinking long and hard about what's next. And it's funny, I mean, they've had success over the years with Bill O'Brien. He has made the playoffs. He's won the AFC South. I suppose you don't, that after a certain point, that gets a little stale. As Danny, you've compared him to Marvin Lewis. I think it's a very accurate comparison. But that he's getting more and more power despite, honestly, just a pathetic playoff performance against Kansas City after the opening quarter. I don't see the logic behind it, and I don't think anyone in that city can either.
I think they look at it and say, all right, man, this is all you. If you don't go further this season than you've gone before, we're going to hit a hard reset and reset everybody. We're going to hire a new GM and a new coach. I think it's best to hire those on the same cycle so you're not pairing a coach that's already had the job with a general manager that's new or vice versa. I think you want them both on the same timeline. I see this as it putting it in line of, all right, you've got an elite quarterback in Deshaun Watson. You've made all these decisions. You're not going to have anybody else to throw on the fire. This is your butt this season. It makes a certain amount of sense from that. I do think that they're high-centered. They're as good as they're going to get under Bill O'Brien, and the more power you give him, the more stuck you're going to be there.
Right. You need to have challenging voices. Just like you said earlier with the Browns and the hive mentality, you got to have someone who's going to question him. Who's going to question him right now? Right now, everyone that is in a position of power is someone who has probably been in a position, put in this position, because they basically report up the chain of command to him.
It is Danny and Gallant. We've been talking about the Super Bowl and the success that Andy Reid and the Eagles have both had. We'll talk a little bit more about that coming up next here.
This hour is brought to you by Infinity of Tacoma at 5.
You are listening to Danny and Gallant.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
I've been referring to it as the world's best divorce, and that's not entirely fair. As someone who has watched a parent go through a divorce, it's extremely difficult and painful. And look, it's a job. It's not the same. But with Andy Reid and the Philadelphia Eagles, the fact that both seem to have in some ways benefited from a bit of a fresh start or from parting ways, that's really unusual in the NFL. You talk about trying to win the breakup, which is certainly something I still feel about Richard Sherman. I think both Reed and the Philadelphia Eagles each is better off for the fact that after 14 seasons as coach, they parted ways.
Yeah, I definitely think in the case of the Andy Reid party of this divorce, that they're way better off. I mean, they were in a situation in Philadelphia where they struggled to get the support of the people. They did not like Andy Reid for reasons I still can't really understand. And then you look at the Kansas City, the Philadelphia Eagles. That's where I'm struggling with on that side. I think the Eagles went through a rough patch. It was a couple of years. And now they've come out on the other side of said rough patch looking good. And I suppose when you look back at a divorce, my parents are divorced. It took one of them a little bit longer, I think, to get back on the right track than it did necessarily the other. I think both of them now look back at it, and I know from the outside looking in that it was definitely great for both of them.
Yeah, and the Chiefs have honestly, Andy Reid runs a different offense now. He was very firmly in the Mike Holmgren West Coast system, and that was what Donovan McNabb ran. And I think starting with Michael Vick and some of the success they had, the Eagles had with him, and now going to Alex Smith and then Patrick Mahomes. Look, all of those guys are first-round picks, so it's not like he's been finding some sort of hidden treasures there.
Right.
But he has made the most of their skill set. And with this offense with Patrick Mahomes, it's the best offense in the league. It's as much as people talked about the Rams, there was always that underlying, okay, what about the quarterback? With the Chiefs, it's an electric offense with all sorts of talent. And then it's got this incredible trigger man in Patrick Mahomes.
And it has no running game. I mean, that's the most incredible part about the whole thing. They can't run the football, conventionally at the very least. You go back to Andy Reid's time in Philadelphia, it was somewhat similar. I mean, Brian Westbrook was probably more of a receiving running back than he was an actual running back. I know if you look back at the statistics, you could perhaps argue otherwise. But that's just sort of been Andy Reid's forte. He's been able to make it work without that every single down kind of running back. Now, he certainly had some. He had one in Jamaal Charles in Kansas City, but I think that's an incredible element of what he's been able to accomplish, because it is tough to win in this league without having some semblance of balance.
The hardest thing to find from Kansas City's offense is Mahomes, a quarterback like Mahomes. I think watching him throw the ball the way he moves, he's just different. Travis Kelce, Tyreek Hill, of those two guys, which is the next hardest thing to find? If you were going to try and say, let's take some elements from their offense, what would be the most easy to replicate or to borrow from their success?
To borrow. I think that to be more focused on the pass sets everything up, that probably would help out a lot. What's weird with the Chiefs is that They don't do anything with the pass that could probably set up a pretty solid running game, even if they had some sort of competent running back instead of LeSean McCoy, who is I don't know how many years old at this point, now in his second stint with Andy. I think that's really one of them. Russell Wilson's the bread and butter of your offense, and yeah, you might like to run the football and establish balance and all of that, but passing the football can also set up the run. And I don't know that the Seahawks necessarily view things in that from that perspective. I think they say, we're going to run the football, it's going to set up the play-action fake, and the play-action fake is going to allow us to throw it deep downfield to Tyler Lockett and to DK Metcalf, and things will take care of themselves from there.
Could Wilson do what Mahomes is doing?
Yes. Yes. I think if you give him another weapon, and if he were to have had, theoretically, all of his weapons all season long, couldn't he have put up some of the statistical production that Mahomes did?
Mahomes is pretty freaky. Mahomes' arm, and Russell's got a great arm. Mahomes' arm is incredible. And for lack of a better term, Russell is more, not robotic, because he's still very creative in throwing it, but it seems like more mechanically. Like, when Russell throws on the run, his form is very important to him. It seems that you get a little more ad-libbing, whether it's a sidearm throw or a left-handed, that there's a little more ad-libbing that Patrick Mahomes does. That question of how the offense is run, though, Patrick Mahomes is the one quarterback who can go off script as well as Russell Wilson.
Yeah.
Wilson's as good as anybody, the best in my mind, in, okay, the drawn-up play didn't work, and he gives you a second shot at it by staying alive and keeping his eyes downfield. Mahomes is every bit as good as that.
We've seen it recently, too. I mean, he's, despite a dislocated kneecap earlier this year, he's running very well, and he is running decisively and with confidence. I think when you look at that element that Mahomes has been able to bring to the table, and then you factor in what you just mentioned, Danny, the fact that he's essentially just, like, doing whatever he wants out there. I mean, sometimes he's throwing passes without looking. Those are things that Mahomes, you look at and you're like, okay, from a talent perspective, I don't think anyone can top it. And he's also a little bit taller than Russell Wilson, which certainly helps him out as well. But I think Russ can do some of the same things. Maybe not zip in a football from one side of the field to the other, like 20 yards downfield and then 53 yards or whatever it is across. But there are other things that he can do, and I think that's the big frustration since I have come here and just trying to understand Seahawks fans. I think a lot of you guys look at them and you think, man, I mean, What if he passed every single down? Look at this game against the Bucks.
Yeah, I agree with that. Here's the other thing I would say, though, and this is where Andy Reid is unusual in that he's given Mahomes that freedom. So is Pete Carroll. And for all of the different things of the let Russ cook and just turn it over to him and let him go, let's recognize that Pete Carroll, unlike a lot of coaches, doesn't force conformity to his offense. There's a lot of coaches that would have, especially early in Russell's career, told him, look, run the play as it's drawn up. Don't hold on to the ball as long. There's a lot of guys, including Mike Holmgren, who was here and is an incredible coach. That would have been his approach in some of those things of, hey, I like your creativity, but do a little bit more of what I tell you to do because my offense is proven. And I do think it needs to be acknowledged that Pete has been willing, not just been willing, dude, he's embraced the idea of let's be the best scrambling team in the league. And that's a large part of why Russ has flourished. So as I understand the conversation, I understand the urge to say Russ should pass more, and I tend to agree with that. Let's also be careful that we don't get into the point of, hey, it's the way he's allowed to pass. He gets a tremendous amount of freedom already within that offense, more than I think most other coaches would give him.
Right, and you know, of the people at our station, I think Jake Heaps can probably explain it best to us. There are some elements of what the Seahawks do that we see and we don't quite grasp. I would say specifically anything that involves like run pass option, read option, things of that nature, and what reads he's good at, what reads he's bad at. I think that's one of the things that they could maybe do some different and experimental things with potentially to see if there's something extra they can pull out of that and that still threat that Russell Wilson can run. But I think that's one of the things that he does have on Patrick Mahomes. I think for Mahomes, who does do some of the same things, by the way, I think that that is something that Russell has just more expertise on. So use that and make it as advantageous as you could possibly do.
It's Danny and Gallant. I like this idea of being more experimental. Yeah. Kind of sounds like some sort of secret test trials. We're going to go out with three offensive linemen and four tight ends. Ooh. Like I like this idea. I like the idea of being more experimental. We're going to raise flags. We're going to pick up flags. We're going to throw flags. It's all coming next.
From the pocket and flags everywhere.
Flag on the play.
Now there's a flag down.
Every morning at 9:45 with Danny and Gallant. Brought to you by Carter Volkswagen.
If the noise persists, the defense will be charged with a timeout.
Flag on the play.
Do we know who's officiating the Super Bowl? Who the referee is? Is it going to be John Hussey? That name always makes me laugh. John Hussey. That little Hussey's going to referee the Super Bowl.
Right, listen, as long as it's not Jerome Boger, that's all I need.
I don't know why you don't like Boger.
Because he doesn't know the rules.
I think he's relatively harmless.
It's not harmless when you don't actually know the rules. He doesn't know the rules.
Could be Corrente. Corrente likes to talk a lot.
I like a talker.
Vinovich.
Bill Vinovich. I like Vinovich. Don't like Pete Morelli. Glad he's gone. It's time where we get together and we make our own official decisions. Throwing, raising, picking up, all sorts of options when it comes to the flags. Jessamine, let's start with you.
Me? Thank you so much. Well, unfortunately, I officially have a Gronk on the 49ers. No matter how much I detest the team, there's a tight end that I just can't get over. And that award goes to George Kittle, who just keeps being hilarious.
I'm telling you, he leaves me on red all the time. I'll be like, hey, Jimmy, I got a question. Maybe on this play, should I run my route like this? No response. Jimmy, you want to go to a movie? No response. And then the next day, he's like, yeah, I got your text. I just hit respond. Thanks, Jim. That's awesome.
He's he's unhateable. And that's very tame. He's got so many more, but I don't have enough time to play all of his hilarity. That's just the most recent. I like the guy. And so I'm raising a flag for him.
I like him, too. I love what he said. Thanks, Jim.
Thanks, Jim.
Yeah, like Jimmy Garoppolo's not a Jim.
Yeah. No.
He's either a James or a Jimmy.
Or a Jay, right?
He's
what
so
up,
a Jay. He's so a Jay.
What
JG.
Up,
Jay? JG, what's happening?
Oh, boy. Nope. Can't do it. Nope. Can't do it.
Oh, is that disrespectful?
Oh, no.
I got to be careful. I don't want to hurt Paul's feelings about his quarterback.
Well, listen. JG is the name of this hilariously terrible yet enthusiastic rapper from my hometown of Hanover, Massachusetts, who me and my best
rapper
friend...
Hold on. rapper has to be put in quotes if he's coming from Hanover, Massachusetts.
We're putting all sorts of air quotes around this one, okay? Don't get me wrong. This is a person that me and my best friend, Mark Scribby, we knew, like, vaguely. But he put this rap album out when he was in high school, and we still listen to it. But his name is JG, with famous songs like Macking Y'all Broads All Day and others. So I'm sorry. Anything with JG, to me, that's like, it's the most insulting thing you could call someone.
Interesting. Lydia, our little bright ray of sunshine in every morning.
I don't know about that.
Yes.
I am going to raise a flag for Richard Sherman because, man, I love Sherm. Of course, the ending here in Seattle, complex, but at the same time, I loved hearing from him yesterday, talk about his time in Seattle, compare it to a breakup where the wounds were still a little bit fresh. And I appreciate the fact that, you know, he is the ex that's not posting a whole bunch of selfies on Instagram. He's just quietly going about living his best next life with his new significant other.
I will contrast that. I think that's very well put. I'm going to throw a flag. 15 yards for unnecessary aggrandizement is assessed to one Frank Clark.
Ooh.
When you use first and last name to refer to oneself and then do it again, I'm not sure if this is the most self-centered statement I've ever heard, but it's pretty close.
I don't compare myself to no other defensive end in the league. I feel like my skill set is unique. Especially, you talk about Frank Clark. When I'm healthy, I don't feel like it's a lot of defensive ends who can compete with me or play football at the level I play at. I play at an extremely high and aggressive level where I don't tolerate a lot of stuff that offensive players do. And, you know, I'm sure he's going to block and do all those good things and make some good catches and stuff. But at the end of the day, Frank Clark is going to be on the field and they have to see me, so...
Got to see me. At the beginning, it kind of sounds like a little bit of Tyson when he said, my defense is impregnable. My style is impetuous. A little bit like that. My style, my skills are unique.
The only thing missing is just the way that Mike Tyson puts, breathes words into existence, like a Bolivian.
That was the best. He's
going
to vanish into Bolivian. That was after the Lennox Lewis fight, which I think the lead up to it, he threatened to eat Lennox's children.
Well, yeah.
Which is
natural.
Totally
terrifying.
Normal.
Right.
Yeah. Lots of protein.
Yeah. Right.
Wow. Leave it to me to go dark.
Yeah. Well, no.
What just happened?
It evoked memories of one of the most famous pieces of satire ever, A Modest Proposal.
Yikes. I like going to these dark places. That sort of
encouraged
me.
An end to the Ireland potato famine by eating their young.
Ooh, yeah. Yeah. Sometimes you got to do it.
Usually I steer us out of this ditch, and I
That's
just
true.
Shoved
us
off
there.
The cliff.
That's correct. Your fault.
Big into decreasing the surplus population. Really.
Paul?
Yeah.
Let's stop talking about decreasing the surplus population and throw your flag.
Ebenezer Scrooge. Just quoting Ebenezer Scrooge, people. I'm not actually endorsing this. Hey, Danny... One of the things I like about you is how curious you are and how you try new things. So I'm going to throw a challenge flag at you because you have become addicted to TikTok,
man.
It is fascinating that you've become addicted to this new app that basically is mostly being used by like high schoolers and college age kids. Explain this to me. I don't know what it is. I don't get it.
It is a series of small videos, which the editing software on the app allows you to sync up and lip sync essentially to different songs or different vocal tracks or different outtakes. And you see people using the same song or the same refrain or the same piece of patter from a comedy album to illustrate different things. And it is highly addictive because you can just scroll from one to the next to the next. And it's not like YouTube where you have to wait for it to load. Like, you just flip it and then all of a sudden the next one plays. So it is crack cocaine of social media where you just can sit there and before you know it, you've watched like 40 of them. And you're like, my God, what the hell am I doing?
Is there any, do you have any control over it? It just goes from thing to the next to the next to the next?
You can
Are there
search
themes?
Stuff. Yeah, there can be themes. You can go to different channels. Pretty much, I just flip through, and then I realize how little I know about current music. I've started listening to Back Up by Dej Loaf, appearing with Big Sean, because I was introduced to that song through TikTok. There's. I don't think it's improved my life. I wouldn't advise anyone to do it, but like, it's a rabbit hole that will consume hours at a time if you let it.
I feel like it's a dangerous. That's a dangerous game for me because as someone who is somewhat obsessed with the gram, I feel like this is a next level kind of thing.
I will say that it did allow me to find out the Stephon Diggs thing, where none of the Vikings wanted Diggs to date their sister, which was funny.
That's fantastic. Okay,
Diggs 100%.
No,
no,
no, just no,
just no.
Dalvin, what guy on the team would you least like to date your sister?
What the hell?
Diggs. Why Diggs? Man. No. We're going to leave it like that. No.
No.
Very firm.
That's going to do it. I'm Danny O'Neill, and he's Paul Gallant, and I would allow him to date my sister if he wanted.
Oh, well, okay. You know what, Danny O'Neill? I think that this wouldn't work out so well on your front, seeing as you're married and all of that. But, yeah, I suppose I could do that the same way. Everyone, thank you so much for tuning in. Big thanks to Michael Bumpus for stopping by, as he always does. So long, farewell. You'll hear from us tomorrow.